Okay. We'll move to our speaker cards. I have five of them. Mary Bianchi, followed by Kara Blakesley, Kevin Merrill, Kay Mercer, and Richard Quant. Quant? Or Quant?
Quant.
Quant. Kara, I'm going to put your card last. Kara, okay. Okay. Ms. Bianchi.
Thank you. I've submitted a letter to your board as well. Good morning, Chairman Young and board members. My name is Mary Bianchi. I'm a horticulture farm advisor with the University of California. And as a tangible measure of the impact of Watershed Coalition activities, I'm pleased to report receipt of the 2008 Western Extension Director's Award of Excellence for the Farm Water Quality Project. We were selected as one of only two programs out of 23 submissions representing the excellence and extension efforts in the 13 states of the Western region. Since January 2001, 33 UC advisors and specialists have worked with 81 local collaborators, including the coalitions, to extend 62 farm water quality planning short courses to 2,029 irrigated agricultural producers representing more than 375,000 acres. This represents 930 hours of classroom and field education, and each course working with the coalitions was adapted to participant needs, including six Spanish language courses and a Chinese language program. We know that through end of course follow-up evaluations and surveys using the Dillman method, that completion of the courses encouraged producers to complete individual water quality management plans. Producers also report possessing the information they need to implement water quality protection, and coalition coordinators have been critical in support of these activities. Project developed publications working with the coordinators were provided to all of these course participants and have collectively, since the project began, been accessed online more than 27,000 times. Grower participants, through their registrations, have also supported this program, providing more than $200,000 in funding through their short course registrations. So it's important to recognize that the industry does support this program in different ways. And while it may be that the farm water quality short courses would not have happened without cooperative extension, we could not have delivered these programs without our project partners. And these included the Natural Resources Conservation Service, as well as the Ag Industries Coalitions for Water Quality in both the North and Southern counties. I want to acknowledge your staff members who collectively have participated in every one of the 62 short courses. Allison Jones, Amanda Byrne, Corrine Huckabee, Jill Wilson, and Julia Dyer represented the policies and programs of your board with good grace and good humor in sometimes challenging arenas, and our thanks to them. And last but not least, thanks to your board for the financial support of this project, the Farm Water Quality Project, through the years, making our efforts possible. And I hope you will consider support of continued watershed coordinator activities. While our University of California academics and staff were honored with this award, please be assured that I accepted it gratefully on behalf of all of the members, 114 members of the Farm Water Quality Project, and I thank you for your attention.
Thank you for your comments. Kevin Merrill. And then Kay Mercer.
Good morning, Chairman Young and fellow board members. I'm Kevin Merrill, president of the Southern San Luis Obispo and Southern San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara County Watershed, soon to be one giant coalition. We thank you for taking this up today. As we said, we came to you guys back in January and February to discuss it. We have since time come up with, worked since May with Corrine and Allison on several scopes of work, four to be exact. And to kind of let you know, we're a little disappointed today that we're not having you look at the final scope of work that we did that we thought was complete. We are open-minded and look forward to in coming in and talking with Mr. Briggs and Mr. Thomas on going over the tasks. But we have worked hard on four additions to this point. We were a little surprised by the last minute, change in the and not thinking that was the final draft. But again, we are welcoming the opportunity to come in and talk about it. I will caution you, however, it does cost what it costs to run this program. And we have been extremely frugal and, I think, good fiduciary agents of the money, and we have accomplished a great deal in the last 5 years. So to talk about cuts to this program, I just want to caution you that if we want to continue to make the progress that we have, cutting us back in money isn't the way to go about it. The agricultural community in this whole area is under siege. It is one of the most difficult times for agriculture to remain in business, as you know. We continue to get hammered with either food regulations, tomatoes from Mexico and what have you, that cause our markets to tumble, and our growers simply aren't making any money. And to continue to add more cost to these growers, at some point they just say, you know, I had enough and I'm not going to do this anymore. And the fruits and vegetables can come from Mexico or they can come from Argentina. I can't bear the cost of this anymore. So I think we have to be careful. We've made a lot of progress. This has been a really successful program. We want to see it continue. We don't want to be short-sighted and not fund it for a couple $100,000 to make it continue to go on. And we will do everything we can and have been doing everything we can to attract other grant money. But it's very difficult because we're not we are not technical service providers. And to attract grant money, you need to be a technical service provider. So we're going to work that out, I hope, with Mr. Briggs and Mr. Thomas to address that problem. So I hope that you will go ahead and fund the $502,000, and we will do everything we can to spend that money the best we can and have agriculture continue to participate in this program.
Mr. Merrill, what is your total budget on an annual basis for the program?
I'm not sure what the total budget is, but I'll let Kay answer that for you.
All right.
Yeah.
Any comments or questions for Mr. Merrill?
Okay. Thank you very much.
I'm Richard Quandt, I'm president of the Grower Shipper Association. And I'm also a member of the Agricultural Watershed Coalition. I'm here today speaking on behalf of the industry, agriculture in our area, especially agriculture in the lower reaches of the Santa Maria Valley and the Oso Flaco Watershed, which is among the areas that's most impaired in this region. I'd like to urge you to support the continued funding of the Agricultural Watershed Coalition. I think it's been a unique organization. It's been very successful in terms of elevating water quality in the minds of the growers. They have many other issues that they're dealing with in terms of their farming practices, and the coalition, I think, has elevated water quality. It is also, I think, demonstrated some flexibility on behalf of a regulatory agency that we're going to address agriculture in a new way because of the scope and extent of agriculture, and we need to look at new ways to address agriculture, and I think that's been very helpful. You know, the funding is very important, but I also need to emphasize the most important component of the success of the coalition is grower involvement, and this coalition needs to have the farmers buying into the program and participating in the program. And that's why the mission statement of this organization was developed, to be voluntary and to be educational and to be outreaching to the growers. And I'm very concerned that if the expectation of this board or your staff is to move this program into, to change the mission of this program into more of partnering with the board in terms of monitoring management practices and trying to survey management practices and as a conduit of information that the board would like, that the perception among the growers at that point in time is that the coalition is acting as an arm of the board. And that very well may undermine the level of participation of the agricultural community for this effort. And I'd just like to give you a caution. You do not want the farmers to circle the wagons and start lobbing lawsuits at people. And that's what they do with other regulatory agencies on a regular basis. They have not reacted that way with this agency because you have taken, I think, a different approach towards outreaching with the farmers, and you've supported the coalition. And I think in terms of the scope of the work, your staff and this board has to be very cautious in making sure that the scope of the work is consistent with the mission statement of the coalition, and you don't inadvertently undermine their effort. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, Kay Mercer and then Kara Blakesley.
Thank you. I'm Kay Mercer, and I have been acting as the coordinator for the Southern San Luis and Santa Barbara Counties Ag Watershed Coalition, and will, and the pending executive director, I want to point out that Dawn Mathis has done a fabulous job. She's here today as the executive director for the coalition in the north. If you have questions maybe concerning the merger, she may be able to answer some of those. I want to thank you for the opportunity to come before you. Also, thank you for the past opportunity for funding. As Richard pointed out, that was perceived by the agricultural community to be very generous, and it was on the part of the regional board and in building a collaborative effort. Richard spoke about our mission statement, and I too wanted to speak about that. The verbatim. The mission statement for both coalitions in the past has been to represent farmers and ranchers in the development and implementation of voluntary, cost-effective, producer-directed programs to protect water quality. That was so that's the mission of both the coalitions. As we merge, that mission will have to be revisited. To that end, as we've talked about in the past, the Southern Coalition developed some strategic guidelines. Number one was that we were not a technical service providing group. The reason for that was so that we did not build any type of competition with our partners like RCD, UC Cooperative Extension, or NRCS, that we could work in jointly with them and not compete for funds. We were able to parcel out responsibilities. The second thing is that we coordinate. So we work with diverse groups to try to coordinate. The third thing that we did was to work with individual growers on regulatory compliance and water quality improvement. And the fourth thing was to do basically to administer the program. So there's a lot of entities that provide technical research or do research or regulate or grow crops or act as activists. Our role was to be that person in the middle to try to be the conduit and the liaison to try to get those people to work together and talk together. Quite honestly, this is a very difficult position to quantify and measure, but without it, what you'll have are five different silos all doing their own separate thing, and you won't be able to coordinate water quality protection activities. And so that is, it's very unique. We were talking about growing the organization. Well, one of the things that we found, we applied for over $1.5 million worth of grants over the last 4 years. I spent a lot of time. In 2006, I spent up to 50% of my time looking for grant funding. We came across one grant that was for coordination, and we landed that. We got the second largest award in the state. That was the Department of Conservation grant. We were awarded other grants as well. Guess what? They weren't given to us. We teamed on a grant, a $200,000 grant, for to bring nutrient training to Hispanics in the Santa Maria area with CDFA, and we were the grant, and we were the principal investigator, but the CDFA said, we don't want to give you the money. They ended up giving it to the RCD. That would have been $200,000 that we didn't get. So we had a lot of challenges in getting grant funding. I'm out of time. If you have questions about what we're asking for in terms of the proposal, I'd be more than happy to answer those or respond to any of the other comments or questions.
You know, just a question that I have that kind of, I think, cuts more to the to the point of where Dr. Press was headed mm-hmm. with his comments is, at some point in time, our money runs out, regardless of how we tinker with it now, whether we do or not tinker with it. but at some point the organization needs obviously to be self-funded. Is that going to happen?
Yeah, that's going to happen. One way or the other, it's going to happen. I think that's, if we were standing here and had not merged, if we were standing here and had not made any organizational changes, I think your concerns would be very legitimate. But that is one of the major reasons behind the merger, is they needed an executive director. We needed to make some organizational changes. I think that we will also have a lot more access to funding. For example, last week I submitted a fund to the Western IPM Center to develop a working group for OP pesticides. What we're seeing is DPR, the industry, the water quality regulators, the growers, the people that should be developing mitigations, all working in their own little vacuums, and nothing's happening. From that, we hope to identify three mitigations, and from that, we hope to be able to develop, bring in grant funds to develop mitigations for OP pesticides. If we had not been a region-wide organization, we couldn't have done that. If I'd still been working as the watershed coordinator in the project area, we could not have submitted that grant. So I think that there'll be a lot more grant funding. We'll be able to leverage a lot more grant funding by virtue of the fact that now our organization works with 90% of the lettuce production in the U.S., 85% of the coal crop production, 85% of the strawberry production, and 15% of the of wine grape production. That'll help us leverage at a national level, which we haven't been able to do before.
Dr. Press.
Yeah, I want to reiterate that I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Please don't misconstrue what I'm saying. Moreover, you just told us that you've been active in seeking contracts and grants.
Right.
Let's know about that. That wasn't present in...
It should have been.
In detail. Spell it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm saying this as a lame duck, so,
yeah.
You know... The staff may insist. I don't know my colleagues, but it would be good to anticipate this line of inquiry by including a description of down to the dollar amount or even the proposals themselves as part of your reporting on your work. It wouldn't take very much to just put together on an annual basis a packet of your grant proposals, even if they're unsuccessful. It shows that there's a level of activity and I think allows us to turn to the public and say, look, this organization, not only are they doing terrific things on water quality and working with growers, but look at how active they are at fundraising activities. That's all. It's not. I don't think that's onerous at all. I think it's just good. In a way, really, what you're doing by doing that is to is tooting your own horn in even more completely. You know, by saying we're being very active in this key area. That's all.
Yeah, and to a certain degree, well, that really did happen with staff. At that
right,
staff
but
level,
it
didn't get translated from there to you, and that is unfortunate. We have definitely kept staff apprised of the difficulties that we were having, yeah. And that's a conversation. In fact, we in the last grant, we were very concerned that we wouldn't make 40% match as early as 2004, uh-huh. late 2004.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Any other board comments or questions for Ms. Mercer? Okay.
All
thank
right.
you very
thank you.
Much. Okay, last
Mr.
Speak.
Chairman.
Yes.
Before we
hear from Kara.
Hear from Kara. I just want to provide a little bit of context in that the proposal that you have before you and that we've been talking about exclusively at this point is the action item that you have before you. And so what's happened is it has prompted CARES organization to provide some information about another proposal. So in a way, this is a very similar situation to what we had last February, where we had some proposals before you with recommendations for funding, and you were lined up to say yay or nay to those proposals, and yet we heard about the coalition's needs down the road, and that they would like you to consider those down the road, which is what we're doing today. So in a way, this is a very similar situation where you now you have the coalition's proposal before you, and yet the American Land Conservancy is saying, here's something for you to consider in terms of the bigger picture of what are the priorities for the funds that the board has access to in terms of allocation. So I just wanted to try to set the scene a little bit so it's not confusing in terms of what action is before you today.
Okay.
Thanks.
What an introduction.
Good morning, Mr. Briggs, Mr. Thomas, the board members. I'm Kara Blakesley. I'm representing here American Land Conservancy. And I saw you all last February, and I just wanted to reiterate what Mr. Briggs is saying. I don't expect that our project is in any way competition with what you're presenting today. In fact, this sounds wonderful. What we are here today is to talk about the other funds that are not yet allocated in the hopes that when you turn to the question about what do you do with the rest of the funds, you will consider this project once again. And so today I'm just going to provide you an update on where we've been since last February, refresh your memory about the project we're working on, talk about its extraordinary outcome, and I think if I were to summarize your feelings from last February, if I'm remembering correctly, there was some hesitation about whether American Land Conservancy could really pull off what we were proposing to do. And I think today I'm here to show you that we're making really terrific progress with the help of a lot of other organizations. And my hope is that by the end of the presentation today, you'll have in mind this project so that when you again return to the allocation of the remaining Guadalupe settlement funds, that you put them towards this project. So I think it's very extraordinary. So backing up a little bit, American Land Conservancy is a nonprofit conservation organization. We're a national organization, and one of our claims to fame, if you will, is that we take on projects that tend to be more challenging and difficult than many other conservation organizations, and we have, frankly, a terrific record of success. And probably the most challenging project we've had to date was the Hearst Ranch, and as you probably know, we successfully completed that a few years ago. Right now, we're actively involved in what we call Wild Cherry Canyon. You've heard of this project before in different names. Avila Ranch is our most recent name. It's also been referred to as Lucadia Ranch or the Sullivan Ranch. In any event, it's the 2,500-acre piece in Wild Cherry Canyon, which is sort of the botanically and historically accurate name for it, within the Irish Hills region, just, I guess you would say, west of the town of Avila Beach on the way out to Port San Luis. We have a contract, an exclusive option to purchase the underlying leaseholds that govern all uses of the property for the next 160 years. The purchase price for those land interests are $24 million, and we are well on our way to raising that amount, although we're a little bit shy, and so we're seeking your support to help close that gap. And specifically, what we're asking you for is about a less than 4% of the total purchase price coming from the regional board, and the rest is coming from a number of other resources agencies in Sacramento, and I'll talk about those briefly. But this project is exciting for a couple of reasons. One, 2,500 acres, if we're successful, will be turned into a new state park. In addition to that, if we are successful, and we will be, the Nature Conservancy will also be transferring at the same time several hundreds of acres to the state parks. And in addition to that, the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo will be transferring 1,500 acres over the Hibbard Preserve to state parks. And all those properties are connected. And what I'd like to do in a very low-tech manner is just pass around a map of the Irish Hills region. And you'll see in red, we say Avila Ranch. We're now again referring it to Wild Cherry Canyon is located right here. The Hibbard Preserve, which is owned by the Land Conservancy, is directly north and adjacent to that property. And the properties that you see in number 5 and number 3 are being acquired by the Nature Conservancy. So by the end of the year, our hope and expectation is that all of these parcels, which total about 5,500 acres, would be transferred to state parks, creating a significant expansion of Montana de Oro. And also, because they're all connected, it would enable a public trail all the way from Los Osos through the Irish Hills all the way down to Avila Beach. So our project, I think, is pretty terrific in and of itself. But when you consider what it's connected to and what is also going to state parks in the same time frame, it's truly extraordinary. It's the really big conservation project of this region. So, Michael, may I turn? And I guess I would say is I'm looking at your vision for the future, healthy, functioning watersheds, and I looked at your measurable goals this morning. And it seems to me that it seems easier to prevent the degradation than trying to fix it thereafter. And with this small but very leveraged allocation from the regional board, you have the opportunity to protect multiple watersheds in the Irish Hills region. And it is a self-sustaining project in that if you can make this allocation to this project, the cost of management, the cost of the acquisition, the other 96%, all come from other entities. And we will not come back to the regional board again and ask for additional monies because it's just this one-time purchase opportunity. Since we last met in February, we have gained an awful lot of support for the project, so I wanted to very quickly go through the entities and agencies that have supported us thus far. And the reason the list isn't longer is that we just continue to add them every day, so it's a growing list. But where we are today is we have the support of the director of the California Department of Parks and Recreation, Ruth Coleman, the support of the executive officer of the California Coastal Conservancy, and support of the executive director of the Wildlife Conservation Board, and you've received letters from all those entities. In addition, the California Transportation Commission has supported the project and has fully allocated over $1 million to the project already. State Senator Abel Maldonado and Assemblyman Sam Blakesley have also supported it, and they had some support letters from a prior application that were submitted along with your project. You see those today. The San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors, the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, also called SLOCOG, they funded the project $350,000. The Tribune, several weeks ago, ran an editorial fully in support of the project. The Port San Luis Harbor District, which is a neighboring entity, has also supported the project, as well as Avila Valley Advisory Council, which represents many of the residents from this area. We have many, many conservation organizations who have signed up in support, including the Cayucos Land Conservancy, the Central Coast Concern, Mountain Bikers, the Citizens for Vehicle Free, Napomo Dunes, California Native Plant Society, Friends of Black Lake Canyon, Friends of Napomo Community Park, Friends of Point Sal, the Gross Family Foundation, the Hine Foundation, the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County, the Nature Conservancy, the North Coast Alliance, and San Luis Obispo Parks Open Space and Trails. In addition to the significant support we've received from the project, we have also made incredible strides on the funding side. It is a $24 million deal, so it's expensive, no doubt. That is the appraised value. And incidentally, the appraisal has been completed and it has been through the Department of General Services and fully approved by the state of California, which is a pretty significant obstacle in any conservation project, but that's been complete.
What did you say the appraisal was, Kara?
The appraisal was $24
million,
so it's appraised value. We have three state agencies who are providing the bulk of the purchase money for this project. All of the staff members are recommending approval to the board, and all those agents will be meeting, as we understand it now, in November. So by the end of the year, all the state money will have been completed. So, for example, California State Parks is going to be allocating $6.5 million. That will be the staff recommendation. Just like here, the board has to formally approve it, however, and that will be in November. The California Wildlife Conservation Board is recommending $6 million. The California State Coastal Conservancy is recommending $5 million. We are in the process of seeking money from a variety of foundations, including the David and Lucille Packard Foundation. Incidentally, years ago, that foundation provided a grant to the Nature Conservancy to do an investigation of outstanding conservation areas in this county, and this project was identified as a top priority in the county. So their grant will be following up on a recommendation on their research project many years ago. The California Transportation Commission has already allocated over $1 million. Every year they have an EEMP grant program. This year they had $10 million in that pot. We received over 10% of the entire statewide pot for this project alone. That was significant because it was the first state agencies that formally came on board. We have a private conservation buyer who is prepared to step in and take as much of the land that we can't raise publicly for their own private uses, but we'd have a lot of restrictions on it. Our goal actually is to close a deal without any private conservation dollars, but it's a plan B. So if we raise 80% of the money, then we'll take the other 20% from a private conservation buyer, and we can at least close the deal, and 80% would go to the state. If we raise 100% of the money from public and other foundations, then there will be no private conservation buyers. So we have a plan B. We also are looking for today $950,000 in the regional board. We've applied for LWCF funding, which is Wildlife Conservation Board application, for $750,000. We have already, it says to be applied for, we've already applied for a foundation from the Crestgey Foundation, and they invited us to submit a proposal, which is always a very good sign. SLOCOG, as I mentioned, has already awarded $350,000. And lastly, the Hine Foundation has awarded $150,000. So if you total up all those, it's a $24 million deal. That includes a $950,000 request from the regional board, and we're hoping that you can do that. And again, that would be about 3.9% of the total purchase price, which we think is a great leveraging. And we would really, really invite you to participate. Sometime within the next year, this deal will close. We will have a terrific celebration party, ribbon-cutting ceremony. We will have a lot of state agencies there, and we really hope that you can be there with us because it's very exciting and wonderful. And if any of you have any doubt about this project, please give me 2 hours to show you around, and you'll love it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Any questions? Dr. Press.
Well, more just observations. Last time when you were here, we had some demurs. Part of them had to do with, at the time, you were asking us to, for the same amount of money, but well in advance of having secured other funds. So we were not yet confident that the leveraging was going to happen. You've indicated in your letter that there are pending, especially the three state agency, and of course this is not an action item today anyway, but it's going to be a much more persuasive case when you've raised $17 million, $18 million towards the $24 million. So that's good progress, and that's one observation. Secondly, we had also some concerns last time in February because, frankly, the nature of the ownership was a little funky. This leasehold, they were buying the remaining leasehold, and you're going to get another leasehold. And when, at what point was the title going to be, the fee title going to be transferred, wasn't clear. So that was something that was a little bit worrisome. And then finally, just as another observation, $950,000 is a small percentage, 3.9% of the total project cost, and yes, would leverage a lot of money, but it's a lot of money for us. It's a lot of money out of a very rapidly dwindling fund. So we also discussed last February the possibility of doing something somewhat less than that, but of course, again, this is not an action item. It's just an informational item. I'm sure you'll be back soon to actually ask us to vote, or ask my colleagues, I should say. And anyway, these are questions that I would remind the board to bear in mind as you move forward. It's a great project. It's a big bite for us to chew, and obviously there's more confidence when you've got some of it raised.
May I speak to the underlying fee issue?
Sure.
I think the point you bring up, Dr. Press, is excellent. As I mentioned, the nature of what we're acquiring are the long-term leaseholds, which govern all uses of the property for the 160 years. But the underlying fee title is held by PG&E. And I can't report anything publicly yet, but what I can tell you is we have been in intense discussions with PG&E, and they're going extraordinarily well. And I will shortly be able to report to you the nature of that. But the long and short of it is the state agencies are making their funding contingent on the acquisition of not only the underlying, not only the leaseholds, but also the underlying fee.
Well, this is echoed. It's not, I mean, maybe you didn't want it to be public, but it's echoed by the Wildlife Conservation Board's letter, which actually expressed confidence that the fee title would be transferred by 2025. So I know that. I read it. And I'm just saying that's I'm just recalling the demurs that we had in February and observing that the project is getting more and more attractive as these concerns are being addressed.
So the $24 million appraised value is simply for the lease?
The 160-year leasehold, that's
value
correct.
Value over 160-year period?
Correct.
And what's the basis for that? What kind of activity?
Highest and best use is a residential development of estate-type homes, helping ag cluster.
Right. Okay.
Which they can do on their property, and there have been multiple proposals over the years to do that.
Right.
Interestingly enough, although the properties in the coastal area, only about 15% of the properties in the coastal zone. So the majority of the property, in fact, the most developable portions are outside of the coastal zone, which makes it appraised higher than it otherwise would.
Okay. Any other board questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I look forward to coming back again and making a third plea. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we have a action item, which is on the staff's recommendation for funding.
I have a motion if you want one.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Go ahead.
Well, I would move to accept staff's recommendation in the August 29th revision to the resolution, but with the added language. This will involve some commas, basically. Just before, as the grant term progresses in number 2, page 3, to add and funding activities, so that funding activities are the evidence of funding activities are part of the executive officer's assessment of how the coalition is doing, basically. That's all.
Okay.
Can I add to that?
Sure.
Some exact language that I was thinking of. In that paragraph, number 2, the one staff is proposing, about midway through, it says, upon the executive officer's approval of a contract and scope of work that emphasizes implementation of agricultural best management practices and improvement in water quality, comma, increased match funding. Those are the words I would add. Increased match funding.
Well, I think that I'm sympathetic to the possibility that it might be impossible. I don't want to penalize somebody for not getting. I want to encourage them to try.
Yeah.
So if we put the language in there, if we say funding activities or fundraising activities, then it's saying that they're writing proposals and that they're writing contracts, they're trying to get contracts, not that you're going to ding them if they didn't secure them. That's all.
Okay.
And Dr. Press, do you feel that what they have been doing to date
is
satisfies
terrific.
That?
Yeah. Well, and again, as I was saying with Ms. Mercer, had I had the list of grant proposals with the dollar amounts, even though they were turned down, I would say, okay, this is an active group. It's actively looking to see to raise contracts, grants, in kind, all the rest of it. That's all. It's just another measurable, observable assessment.
Okay.
Which is what I like.
All right.
I'll second.
Okay. Mr. Jeffries, did you have a comment? I see your hand on your...
No, I just want to make sure that, and I echo what Dr. Press is saying, I think we need to know the successes as well as some of the disappointments in the grant writing so we can have a whole collective idea of what your activities on fundraising is including. It's nice to hear about these successes, but we also want to hear about your disappointments. And I think that's all.
That's all I'm saying. I don't think it's onerous at all.
Right.
I have a question on that.
Yes.
Hey, Dr. Press, what I heard you say may be at odds with the rest of the language, because what I thought I heard you say was you want evidence that they're trying.
Mm-hmm.
And the last, next to last sentence would require at least a 40% match. So
well,
it's more than trying.
Sure. Okay, but that's they've agreed to that, and I think the prior sentence is talking about the conditions that you as executive officer are looking at, and I right. want to say fundraising activities as a that they're going to show evidence of fundraising activities. We've already agreed. I think they have agreed about 40% match.
Okay, I want to make sure that you weren't giving a mixed message.
No, I think if you say and fundraising activities in the prior sentence as or even
you want documentation of fundraising.
Yeah,
activities?
Why not evidence of fundraising activities there? If you say evidence of fundraising activities, it's not in conflict with the 40% match. It is simply a one more element in your conditions of
right. I think your language that you suggested was fine. It was your comments about it that
I see.
Could
okay.
have been a mixed
Sorry
message.
About that.
Okay, we have a motion and we have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you very much. Can we do the enforcement report?